whatever. So on that score, I think it's important just to say we really feel the pain that most of these families, and the mere fact that you can have at the time 14 bodies that have not yet been identified, it's a serious matter of concern for the country. But hopefully we will find a breakthrough finally, as long all of us, we are prepared to put the hands on the deck and make the necessary contribution that we are required to do in the best interest of the nation. On that score, you know, Honorable Mandela, when you make opening remarks, you are making them because you think that you are immune from intervention. But let me, because you are Inkosi, allow you the privilege to do so.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Good morning, Honorable Members, Honorable Minister, and officials to DMR. Honorable Chair, let me, through you, bring to your attention in full the details of the said individual from the media who disrespected staff of the committee and even swore at them. It is Miss Linda Ernst Business Day. We as committee members do not take lightly to this matter, and we would request that you attend to it with uttermost urgency. Thank you.
Okay, no, it's fine, but all what I was saying, I will engage with the staff and we will make arrangement, because we have to work, all of us, harmoniously, and if there was something, we will deal with it and we will give a report. Any apologies?
Good morning, members. We only have one apology from Mr. Yestazen. Thanks.
Mr. Yestazen is an alternate, but we take the apology. Okay. Honorable Minister, but before we do so, honorable members, for today we will be dealing with mainly two issues, and I think I will talk to the other one so that by the time we arrive at it, members can comment in overall. Mainly is the briefing by the Department of Mineral Resources on the substantial measures to improve the turnaround times for prospecting and mining licenses, including the SAMRAT application process. And subsequent to that, we are supposed to deal with the report on the oversight in the Western Cape and the standard practice of minutes. Because the report, I hope it's impromising. Because the report you received it now, honorable members, as always, as a generous chairperson, hopefully we'll get the reward from yourselves by the confidence you show, not to me, but to this committee at large. Next week, we'll be dealing with the, like I said in the last time, we'll be dealing with the over with the joint committee meeting, which is a standing committee on finance, trade and industry, mineral resources. Now, I think we've included police as well as justice on the issue of illicit financial flows. So we were going to request, honorable members, so that when we arrive on that item, to just get an assurance to members that we will have our normal 1 hour, for 1 hour on Wednesday at 9 to adopt this report. We leave it, we don't deal with it now. we allow members to go familiarize themselves, and then we take that 1 hour to adopt the report, and then we join the joint committee meetings next week, because it's starting at 10. So when we arrive on that item, after the presentation by the department, there is a proposal on how we should handle the Western Cape Oversight Report. So I hope honorable members will find that in order. Honorable Minister, thank you very much. We are giving the floor to you.
No, thanks, Chair. Honorable members, the media with us today. Thank you for the opportunity to engage with you on the Department of Mineral Resources program on our measures to improve turnaround times on the application processes for prospecting and mining rights as administered on the Samrat system. The Minerals and Petroleum Resources Development Act of 2002, as amended, has placed a administrative role in the department to adjudicate and process application for prospecting and mining rights with the aim to transform the minerals and mining sector while ensuring a sustainable approach to the development of mineral and petroleum resources in South Africa in line with the Constitution. In the processing of applications, the department identified gaps and decided to introduce an application system. The South African Mineral Resource Administration. This system is intended to enhance transparency and efficiency, and there has been a noticeable improvement to the end. However, the system has its own challenges, which are being addressed through the improvement of infrastructure, which will be rolled out from the next financial year. Furthermore, government promulgated the National Environment Management Act to provide cooperative and environmental governance by establishing principles for the decision-making on matters affecting the environment. This is referred to as the One Environmental System. Both the MPRDA and NEMA sought to effectively address all mining environmental issues, with one of its key objectives being to give effect to the environmental right as contained in the Section 24 of the Constitution. My department, together with the Department of Environmental Affairs as well as Water and Sanitation, are implementing the One Environmental System within our application process, and our presentation will highlight how we are implementing, where we remain the competent authority as per agreement reached between the three ministers. Chairperson, we acknowledge that there is room for improvement in our licensing system, and despite the slow growth of our economy as noticed in 2016, we have realized mines opening and investing in capital expenditure, and therefore creating a significant amount of jobs for our people. Honorable members, we look forward to engaging further with you on the presentation by the DG and his team. Just before I thank you, Chair, I should also raise the fact that it should not be taken in a bad spirit when I normally, after say my opening remarks, leave this committee. I should raise that on Wednesdays, as we all know, is cabinet days. So we're always on cabinet. Like now, I've asked to be here. Members should not take it that I do not respect this committee. I really want to be with you up until the end. If something can be done in that respect, I would appreciate it very much. So I should not be taken that I disregard the importance of this committee. Thank you. I didn't complain, Chair, about this room and the facility.
Thank you, Honourable Minister, Honourable Chairperson, members, colleagues, good morning.
I'm here with Honourable Mandela, who's complaining about the mic. Continue.
We'll be presenting on the Eternal Round Times online licensing. Presentation will be done by Mary Bonnie Gambule, who's assisting us with the licensing. But thank you, Honourable Chairman.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Honourable Members. Good morning, Minister. Good morning, Committee. I'll be taking you through the work that we have been doing on the licensing, on improvement of turnaround time within the licensing framework. On page 2 of the presentation, we're going to be talking to the Honourable Members about our legislative framework, the outline of the application process, the SAMRAT system, as Honourable Members have requested that they come and speak to you about, and the measures in that is put in place to improve our turnaround times as we are concerned. In terms of the legislative framework, page 3 to 5 deal with what the MPRDA post-its promulgation seeks to achieve, being to ensure equitable access to mineral resources and to affirm the state's obligation to ensure environmental safety and rehabilitation. Furthermore, the objectives of the MPRDA, as stipulated in Chapter 2 of the Act, is to really give effect to the Constitution and to ensure further that we address past imbalances and give past imbalances on economic participation towards SDSA and to give effect for SDSA to participate in the mainstream of the economy. Furthermore, on page 5, we talk to the legal nature of rights that we issue in the MPRDA, and what we're highlighting here is basically that the law requires that for anybody to conduct any mining or prospecting activities, they need to be licensed and they need to have a prospecting or a mining right. And as amended in the 2008 Act with the National Environment, as the MPRDA is amended in 2008 with the NEMA, also seeks to say that a person may not operate without an environmental authorization. We have attempted to link the application process with the NEMA processes, and we are going to take you through the process from page 6 of the presentation. What we're basically saying is that all applications under NEMA and MPRDA are triggered by the need for a mining activity to take place, which is triggered by the Minerals and Petroleum Resources Development Act, and we lodge those applicants lodge those applications through the SAMRAT system. Members are aware that the applications and rejections are regulated under Section 16 and 22 of the MPRDA. We have our internal processes in terms of adjudication of applications, and while we adjudicate the MPRDA applications, we also take into consideration the NEMA timeframe, which I will talk to in the next slide. The third phase of our application process, as members would be aware, is the granting and refusal of the MPRDA and NEMA applications, which is governed by Section 17 and 23, read with NEMA. The fourth phase, where we have an appeal under NEMA, I must first start by emphasizing that the separation of functions that came into effect with NEMA are as follows: that the Minister of Mineral Resources is the competent authority in respect of mining, and the Minister of Environmental Affairs is the appeal authority where environmental issues are raised. Further on to the presentation, I will talk to how we are aligning ourselves. We have aligned ourselves with the rest of government. On page 7, I will talk to the environmental process, which is called the basic assessment. as required by the by NEMA. And on page 7, still further on, we talk to the amount of days that we take to complete and finalize the basic assessment report. And we further highlight that NEMA has given provision to the appointment of environmental practitioners, and they are entitled to request for extension of time where they are unable to submit documentation. And this is in line with enhancing administrative processes and allowing them an opportunity to submit documents. On page 8, we talk to the application process still on the scoping and a full environmental impact assessment that is in a case where there's mining right applications. And we highlight the amount of days that the environmental practitioners have got to submit scoping reports, and we highlight the amount of days that we have a responsibility to accept. We also highlight the amount of days that we have a responsibility to complete the application. And we're saying the applications can take between 300 and 350 days, but DG in his foresight report continues to report that in cases where the environmental practitioners are able to submit documents on time, we are able to complete those applications within the 120 days that the DG has committed in foresight. On the next slide, the Minister has already spoken to the challenges that we had identified pre-2010 when we introduced the SAMRAT. Most of our challenges really were relating to allegations that officials would give or show available land to the industry, and there was that it resulted in contestation, which led to litigation. So we then said, let us keep the fires burning with the resources that we had, and said that let's introduce SAMRAT, and its aim really is to work to really keep the house burning so that we become transparent in our application processes. And what we can tell the honorable members here is that SAMRAT is made up of three interlinked components, which is the public viewer portal. This public viewer portal, together with the GIS portal, are measures that we put in place for applicants for prospecting and mining rights to lodge applications and to access to select land. On the workflow system on page 9, we are, as Minister has indicated, we are in a process of rolling out infrastructure in the next financial year to improve really on the managing of the applications and the adjudications thereof. On page 10 of the presentation, we then talk to the measures that we currently have in place to improve our turnaround time, and we talk to the improvement of the legislative framework, which is the proposals of the Minerals and Petroleum Resources Development Act, the implementation of NEMA, and currently the proposed review of the mining charter, which has taken public domain. Aligned to that, we talk to the One Environmental System, which I've already spoken about, and we also talk to capacity building workshops, which we conduct on an annual basis with the industry, but we also do those workshops internally as a department. We also talk to the issue of the One Investment One Stop Shop, which is the initiative of the president, which is led by the INC. And as a department, our contribution to that One Investment Stop was two major projects that were identified wherein, between all spheres of government, being ESCOM, Department of Mineral Resources, Environmental Affairs, Water Affairs, we said, let's look at the challenges that were facing the two companies that could contribute to the mining sector, and see how we can unlock their challenges in terms of issues like water use licenses and access to rail and transport. On page 11 of the presentation, as we conclude, I've already spoken to the integrated licensing system, which we are seeking to implement in the next financial year, which we believe we want to see it being a mobile and a platform that we can use offline. And we still we still want to be able to manage our applications online, and we want the would like the integrated licensing system to maintain and update mining company information and assist us further with reporting labor statistics of mines and compliance by mines. We would also like to see, we also plan to have the integrated licensing system providing analytics capability and management of revenue of holders of prospecting and mining rights. I've already spoken to the improvement of the infrastructure, and we're also saying as we conclude that we will be prioritizing our regional offices, and I've spoken to the enhancement of capacity of the administration of the system, which is what we are trying to address internally in terms of prioritizing our capacity as a department. We are currently in a process of cleaning up our data and making sure that our historic records that come emanate from NMPS and are currently on SAMRAD are properly aligned on our GIS platform. And as I've mentioned earlier, we continue to engage our stakeholders through workshops and on the licensing processes. I thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay. Thank you, Bambuni Susan. This is the second shortest presentation ever received. I'm not talking about the content, I'm talking about the time length. It reminds me the one we received in the Free State, which was very precise, straight to the point. I'm not saying anything about Hume Caesar and others that have used to come before. So it's not a comparison. I'm just saying, honorable members, and I have flyer. This time around, honorable Lorima, honorable Schmidt, honorable Nyambi, honorable Mande.
Firstly, a comment from people who are using the system. I hear what you're saying about improvements, but the comment that I've received from people who use the system regularly is that it still kicks you out often, and that it is very difficult, if not impossible, to complete a rights application without doing it on paper. In other words, it seems to be rare, if ever, that anybody can actually do a rights application entirely online. So I'd like your comment on that. Secondly, the way the system is conceived seems to me to be problematic. I'll give you an example. If I see a piece of land that I think is interesting, I think it maybe has diamonds on it in Limpopo, and I look at this farm in Limpopo and I decide I want to make an application, I can't go onto SAMRAD and look to see whether the rights on that piece of land have already been granted. What I have to do is I have to go on and I have to apply. And then SAMRAD comes back to me and the department comes back to me and says, no, the rights there have already been granted, you can't have them. I want to know why that's the case. Surely if this is a public record, and a credible public record, then I can simply go on, I can see, oh no, those rights have already been granted, I don't need to even bother. Because what that seems to me is that even if it doesn't happen, it must raise doubts in people's minds. That there's nothing to say that somebody does have those rights. There's a possibility of the corrupt issuing of those rights to somebody else. If it's not out there in public, you tell me rights have already been issued. And let me give you another, perhaps very simplistic example, but perhaps this will illustrate what I say. Here's somebody sitting at DMR, and it could be somebody in the system. De Beers Diamonds applies for prospecting rights on this farm. Then you think, that's probably because there are diamonds there. Well, I'm not going to give those rights to De Beers. I'm going to give it tip off my friend give it to my friend and then say it's the beer, so somebody's already got the prospective right of that. In other words, the system is, if not open to corruption, at least open to perceptions of corruption, which is almost as bad. So my question, that's a long way of asking the question, is why are all rights not available to be seen by everybody, all issued rights? Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Further to the question posed by Mr. Lorimer on this issue, there are two issues which can be raised in tandem with this. And one is, if the MPRDA is there to ensure access to everyone of right, mining, big mining corporations, the medium, the small size, and the public, is that the purpose of this MPRDA, to facilitate access? How would an individual member with limited ability to all these scoping reports and environmental practitioners run up the cost, A, of ensuring that if that application is accepted, all these other things follow? And as well as if you can today decide I'm going to approach environmental practitioner tomorrow and the day after he starts working. So the system in itself, although it is intended to facilitate access, does exactly the opposite by not allowing an individual to access the system and see, okay, there has been an application by, let's say, De Beers. Let's use the same example. And say, I'm not going to apply because there's already been rights allocated or pending applications. And therefore, I'm not going to put my resources or waste my time in applying for that application, which may be rejected because it doesn't indicate whether there's a mining right or some right issued and or pending. So that's the one thing. Then the second issue, do I understand correctly now that it is a legal requirement that DMR issue environmental authorizations since 8 December 2014? Is that a fact? And of course the fuel authority is in environmental department. So any mining has to be preceded by environmental authorization. Then with it is a transitional period, because the transitional period is still a problem to many companies. Have you resolved that problem? Because some mining companies are saying those applications that have been granted before 8 December 2014 do not require environmental authorization. I've seen senior legal opinion on that. Senior legal guys, who take DMR to court every year so often and win the court cases, saying those that have been granted, and the issue is granted, not issued, granted, but not yet issued, do they require environmental authorization? Because certain companies saying no, and take them to court. They are saying that. It's not a fiction of my imagination. Then thirdly, the appeal to the availability of the internal appeal, as you call it. That can only happen after the mining rights or the prospecting rights, whichever right, has been granted, or after the mining or prospecting rights has been issued. I would guess it's probably after it's been granted, the appeal that gets in. Then, closely similar to what Mr. Lorimer has asked, can applications only be lodged electronically now? Because it seemingly has to be amplified by a hard copy. But is it supposed to be that all applications only be done electronically as supplemented by hard copy? Then, the investment in the one-stop shop of Faroe, because that, in my view, would probably, if anything, facilitate some form of reducing the timeline. Because as I understand it now, you have to go through the whole process with DMR, and you've got to go through the water use application process, and you've got to go through land rezoning application process. So are these to be streamlined, and how? And when are we looking at? Thank you.
Honorable.
Chair, I think there was no elaboration on this question, but I will continue to say it. So just want to know what causes the rejection of this application. I think it will be a similar question, but thank you, sir.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Me, like my colleagues, appreciate the presentation by the TMR delegation. Honorable Chair, contrary to Honorable Lorimore, issue on the licenses and its challenges the system. At least I've received a lot of people applauding and complimenting on the use of this system. But I have my own reservations when we shift to one direction of utilizing an IT system. It somewhat shifts to the literate society or urban-based society where rural applicants may somewhat be left aside. So I'm highly concerned about people in Kala, Indwe, where there's coal, and they see the coal and bathi ndiyakwazi ukuhumba elalahle. How do they then get assistance when the system, they have no access to it, sitting in a village, Ekala or End? How does someone in Mvezo gain access to being able to mine sand on Mbashe River when there's an electronic system that they have no access to? So I would like to gain clarity in that aspect. Honorable Chair, there are challenges that have been indicated on slide number 9 in terms of documents being misplaced, contestations regarding order of receipt and processing of applications, which often lead to litigation. Are these the only challenges that seem to lead to litigation? And I'd say that from my own experience during our oversight, we were exposed to interministerial kind of challenges or inter-department challenges where a mining right has been issued by the minister in the department at the national level, but it's being challenged by a local municipality in the name of city of Cape Town. So how are these challenges being attended to? What is DMR doing to assist mining right holders that have been awarded on a true process the right, but you find that right is being challenged not at the interministerial level or interdepartmental level, but it's been a challenge at the lower sphere of government, such as the local municipality. If, for one, you are speaking of a one environmental system that involves the Minister of Mineral Resources, Minister of Environmental Affairs, and that of Water and Sanitation, and there are to be challenges in that one environmental system, I would think it is an interministerial issue. But we've come to see that in some instances, the challenges that lead to litigation is that the low sphere of government, such as the City of Cape Town, does take the mining right holder to court for such instances. And I'd like to gain clarity in that regard. What support is the department giving to these operators that you have followed a true process and have given a mining right to, and yet they find themselves challenged? Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Chairperson, honorable members, will respond to the questions. But I'll just introduce by saying that we have identified, although there's been progress on the system, because if in South Africa at one stage, we have been taken to court before we introduced the system on double granting of applications. There were cases that we had to deal with in court, and people internationally, they will say, if let's say someone is in Canada wants to apply in Canada, there's no ease of accessibility to that system, and hence we came up with this system. There were also allegations of corruption at that time, leveled against the DMR, and we came with the system to really to assist and deal with those major challenges. But the challenges are still there, and hence Menkambo clearly indicated that we are working on it to improve on the system in terms of coming up with an integrated system. But she'll talk more on what we are doing to deal with it. Just to respond to the other issue that you raised on the one, I think Honorable Schmidt spoke on the one-stop shop. The president of the state came with established the IMC on investment to really to unlock the potential of investment in general within the economy. There were projects that have been identified, including infrastructure projects that have been identified to really to unblock investment and ensure that there's job creation and grow the economy. In our space, we've identified two projects at that time. It was Ivanplat, Platinum, Platriff in Limpopo, and Dinoco in Limpopo as well. The Ivanplat project is a 17 billion project, and Dinoco, I think, is about 5.5 billion. So the IMC assists, because it's all the respective departments coming together to say, how do we ensure that, you know, this project is starting time, and make sure that we assist them. If there's a problem with water license, how do we help them? If there's a problem with infrastructure, how to engage with ESCOM, how to engage with Transnet to really help them. And I think for us it has helped, especially with the Ivanplat project. There was issues with water license, for instance. But we engaged with the respective departments. Now Ivanplat has started. They've invested capital of about 4 billion. And they're looking at employing about 2,500 people in that area. And they'll start producing in 2009. They've already sunk a shaft, I think between 1,500 meters now. They've sunk a shaft in that area. They'll ramp up to 8 million tons. So there'll be more opportunities for job creation there. I think this will go for other similar projects on the Washmeet. But I think, if I'm not mistaken, on Washmeet was also assimilating on the issue of the wine environmental system. At one stage, we had challenges of the department granting the mining rights, but we can't start the mine without a water license. And there were issues of environment as well, that the applicants of companies had challenges with. You know, and they at that time they were raising these challenges sharply to us, that they are preventing investments in the mining sector. And hence the three departments came together and said it's very important that we must align our legislation, including the time frames, because we've strived to complete the application within 300 days, but people will complain that to get a water license it takes a long, long, long time. And you can, if you mine, then you're mining illegally. So the Water and Sanitation Department also aligned the legislation accordingly to assist at least within 300 days. Now through that one environmental system, we've established a committee which came up with terms of reference and respond to those issues that might be raised by the sector. I'll make an example. There's been concerns on the legislation, on the some of the financial provision legislation of NEMA, that the industry was having challenges with. So through the task team, which we call it the IPIC, it helps us to unblock those challenges. In fact, there has been consideration of that law to say how can we assist where we can. You know, I think that's where we are. The committee meets and resolve some of those challenges that are being referred to. Marlon Kosi referred to a matter in here at Western Cape. I think it has to also to deal with the complications of spoon of Lupo. And I'll request my colleague Menkambule to talk more on those and respond to the other technical questions that have been raised on the system as well. Thank you.
I think honourable members would be aware that whilst rolling out the SAMRAD, we have been coming to the committee and reporting on challenges that we have and how we would like to improve on it. And we still committed, and with financial resources in place, we are committed to improving on it. And I think it's important to raise that with the perception of corruption on the SAMRAD system, a regional manager, before he or she accepts an application, the 2008 Act, firstly, the Amendment Act, firstly, states that the regional manager may not accept an application where there's an existing right. So it has taken away that element of availability or non-availability of rights. It's clear that the regional manager may not accept where there's actually an application, not even a right. So we made a departmental decision that regional managers must, although you have an online system, but they must make sure that to eliminate the litigation that we have as a department, they must make sure before they accept an application that there is no other application available that has been launched on the system, just to eliminate that contestation that we have been having. And hence, they have to go back and conduct manual verification. And these are the things that we're saying. We are aware that our infrastructure needs improvement, and those are the things that we intend to improve on the system. Now, in terms of it kicking out a possible applicant, the rationale for that really is that myself as an official, I'm not supposed to be able to see what land is available, but the industry must see what they apply for. I can only see once an application has been lodged and an application has been completed in on the system. We have had challenges in terms of accessibility of the system, and we have put measures in place. And the measures are as follows. Some applicants that have got challenges to access the system do come to the regional offices. They sit with our mineral information personnel. They access the system with them and load those applications and leave with the documents and go and lodge the documents at the regional office. So that's why there may be a perception that there is lodgement of manual and electronic applications. We assist them to lodge. We do not lodge them physically for them, but we assist them. They come and sit down on our computers in the regional office, and they lodge and start paying the contract fee. Then they file the documentation at administration. So that's why there may be a perception that the system is still inaccessible, but we do that. The one environmental system, the one environmental system, what it seeks to achieve, and we have endeavored to achieve that, is that when the applicant for a prospecting right under the NPRDA lodges an application, and logistics and environmental authorization at the same time. We have identified that there's gaps in legislation in terms of acceptance of this application. But we have directed our regional managers that make sure that on the day that you accept an application for the MPRDA, become the day that you acknowledge and accept the, either the EA or the VAR application. And the reason for that was mainly to try and streamline our internal processes so that we do not become exposed to litigation. There's a challenge that comes with it, and the challenge is that normally, maybe let's say an HSA or a junior company would lodge an MPRDA application themselves and then appoint an environmental practitioner. Now to lodge a VAR or a scoping or an EA. Now when that happens, there's room for the following: the applicant of the MPRDA application becomes the contact person of that application. And the environmental practitioner becomes the contact person of the application. So that's why there's also that perception that there's this juncture between a communication on with the, between the applicant and the environmental practitioner, which, if there is no communication between the two, may lead to rejection of some of the applications, as honorable member was asking. In terms of the transitional arrangement, when we introduced in pre-2014, Department of Environmental Affairs agreed that in the transitional arrangement they would complete all the environmental authorizations that they had in place. And the second part of the agreement was that the EMPR would be automatically converted into environmental authorizations. And I would imagine that the honourable member could be speaking to the Fred and Dalmet particularly as to whether an EMP becomes an environmental authorization. We have also received a legal opinion on the matter, and based on the agreement that the ministers have had, we have the ministers have agreed that for applications received. Of environmental authorizations received before 2014 for EMPs received before 20, I beg your pardon, applications under the MPRDA received before 2014 will be dealt with, you know, you cannot apply the law retrospectively, will be dealt with in the order that they were received, and from 2014 they will be dealt with as environmental authorizations. And those that are in the Department of Environmental Affairs, we had the agreement clear that Department of Environmental Affairs had to complete this application. On the issue of appeals, I think we need to separate between the two processes. There can be an appeal and there can be an objection to an application. Obviously, you appeal a decision. So on appealing a decision, you appeal on a decision of a right that has been granted. And you can also probably appeal that we have had cases where mainly communities would lodge appeals against or objections against mining rights that we have already granted on the basis of consultation. We have had those cases, and because we are bound by law to listen to them, we do consider those appeals. But in an event that there's an objection, there's a render process that has to be followed. And where there's a balance here is that Department of Environmental Affairs, Social Affairs and Sanitation and all other states of government sit in the RENDEC with the regional managers. So they sit at the regional offices. I think I have attempted to address the issue of what happens to applicants that are in the rural areas. Because I have said that we have directed regional managers to assist in terms of lodging those applications in the regional office, but not to physically conduct those applications. The issue of loophole, honourable members, it's a harsh reality that unfortunately mining companies are facing, and it is our concerted view that as government. in view of the fact that this objections against on loophole are mainly targeted at HDSA companies. It's a concern for us as government, and I want to elaborate and make a few examples on it. Normally, historically advantaged white land owners, when they realize that there's an application for a prospect tomorrow mining right, they either go to SARA and attempt to declare the land a heritage site or a game reserve, or they in the case of Maxen, they lose UPO to say the land has been zoned previously for purposes of land use. And that hampers the competency of the minister, and really it sidetracks the objectives of the MPRDA in terms of access of particularly HDSA into the mining industry. I have said that we are concerned that the Maxent case, as Honorable Mandela stated, is a huge concern for the department. There have been instances where, okay, let me maybe start by explaining Section 52 of the MPRDA, that it requires, Section 54, it requires that where a holder of a mining right is prohibited from entering the licensed operation, it requires and it lays out a process that the applicant or the holder must follow under the MPRDA. And most of the cases end up in REMDEC or end up on appeal, and we deal with them as such. There have been cases where landowners have been, mining right holders have been refused access to land, where we have referred them under Section 52 to arbitration, to arbitrate on the issues of access. In certain instances, we have referred them to or facilitated between the Department of Rural Development on accessibility of land with the communities for them to be able to have a conversation with the landowners on the access of the land. I don't know if you would like to add on to that.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to hear, you answered a certain part of my question. It's quite generous. Thank you very much. The only issue which I'd like to find out, the internal appeal can only be done once a decision has been taken, otherwise you can't appeal against nothing. There needs to be a decision. But that is granted. But once it's issued, my question is, once it's issued, does the department then render itself functions of fiku? In other words, it can't then follow an internal appeal? I think that's basically what I wanted to ask is, once it's been issued and it's been materially registered in the title, mining title lease office, then secondly, as I understand, all applications now need to, before you can start mining, there needs to be an environmental authorization. That's a bottom line. Back to the transition, because the EMPR, as I understand it, serves as the EA, as you said. Furthermore, if I understand correctly, the agreement between the departments was that all environmental authorizations would, from 8 December, henceforth be issued or be done by the DMR. You spoke about the environmental authorizations to be done by the Department of Environmental Affairs before December. So that got me confused because, but I agree with you that those EMPRs that were submitted, let's put this way, all the applications that were submitted before 8 December, accompanied by an EMPR, would be dealt with automatically as an EA. If I follow you correctly. In other words, if it's been lodged before the 8th of December with an EMPR that's been accepted, I'm not sure whether that's the operative afterward, but before the 8th of December, it would automatically be regarded as an EA, and then you don't need to apply for an EA from the Department of Marine Resources. Am I stating it correctly? I hope so.
Honorable Loretta?
Yes, I'm still struggling to understand this. First of all, on the question of physically having to go to a DMR office to make an application, what is the point of SAMRAD if not to apply for a license easy? Is it not the idea to be able to do it online? And as a subsidiary to that, are there any rights applications that happen entirely online? And could you give me, if they are, could you give me what sort of proportion of the total? Secondly, I'm still unable to understand why it's not possible to publicly view who owns rights. Simple as that. Please tell me why that's not possible.
Okay.
The mining section 6 of the Mining Titles Registration Act is very clear that once a right has been issued, it can only be set aside by a court of law. That is section 6 of the Mining Titles Registration Act. The internal appeal that I'm speaking to talks to a decision to grant, and it follows the one of the court cases in the Northern King that interpreted the granting and issuing of a mining right, of a prospecting or a mining right. Maybe to be clear, Environmental Affairs pre-2014 was administering listed activities related to mining. Now, the agreement was they will complete all the listed, all the applications for environmental authorization in respect of listed activities. Post 2014, still pre-2014, if you had an EMPR, and because of the non-retrospectivity of the law, if we say decide to grant the right on the 15th of January 2016, which 2015, which is post the coming into effect of NEMA, the EMPR would be deemed to be NEA. But from the 8th of December, when you lodge a mining rights application, you must lodge also an EA application. Is the distinction?
Sir. Okay.
So the operative word is.
Thanks for starting to
so the operative action is once you have as long as you have lodged and accepted before the 8th of December, then you're fine. And automatically be granted as, automatically be considered as an EA.
Yes, because you cannot apply the law retrospectively. You have lodged it under the 2008 Act. You haven't lodged it on the 8th or the 9th of December 2014. So that is the distinction that we would like to make. When we introduced SAMRAD, to be honest, we were trying to, I've already spoken to this, we were trying to keep our house burning, the lights burning, because of the criticism that we had received as government. You know, we have acknowledged that we still need to improve on SAMRAD. And one of the improvements that we need to do, that's why we deliberately say that the public viewer on the portal is for lodgement of applications. But we are saying we still want to improve it to a point where it's an extremely globally competitive system. And we do believe that with the limited resources that we have and the integrated proposals that we have in place, we should be able to realize that. So in answer to why is it that one cannot view, the public cannot view who owns rights, is that we are cognizant of the fact that our system currently was meant only to keep the line spinning, so that we eliminate those perceptions that have been in existence from South Africa citywide city. Honourable Mandela, in terms of assistance to particularly HDSA, the Act still says an application will be lodged at an office of a regional manager. So I had earlier explained that there are cases that we have actually directed regional managers that firstly to ensure that we do not double grant on rights, which has been an area of contestation. They must still conduct physical verification of applications that they receive. And in conjunction with them, we had directed them to say that where applicants come in with their physical files to lodge applications, because the Act requires an application to be lodged at an office of a regional manager. So where an applicant comes in to lodge, they must assist and make sure that they file the supporting documents at registry, but the application will be administered online. I trust that I have
answered. Okay, thank you very much. I think let's start with this one. Eh? I see Honorable Laura. I'm sitting here as a chair, and I assume, let me start with the first one that Honorable Mandela was raising. For someone like in KZN, and there's a lot of coal in Utrecht, and there's not a single robot there. Or around the areas in Flyhead. And that person now as a community must drive for the regional office approximately more than 350 kilometers to Durban just to sit with the regional manager and lodge application. It goes back about what I raised one day. The only major mining activity that is happening in Durban will be sand and quarry. But your actual mineral mining, which is coal predominantly, will be taking place in Utrecht. Now, for that person to drive that 350 kilometers and back and find that he has driven as if he's going to another province, is a cost on its own. Which is, I think, is the point that Honorable Mandela was asking. If he's from Umvezo and you suspect that there's gold in Umvezo, at least it's better. My small town, at least, there's pep and thief. Now, from Umvezo to Port Elizabeth, how many hours? It's about 4 to 5 hours. To Port Elizabeth. And again, Port Elizabeth is not known for any mining, major mining activity or activities. I even doubt quarrying and sand. Now this person must drive that to sit with the regional manager. Now the first problem, don't you think that your geographical location of your offices is a problem on its own? It's too urban, if one were to say. You look for the big centers. You are metropolitan orientated. But the only place that could be much better there could be around Gauteng, Joburg, which is the proximity is not that scattered. But for your major rural, large rural communities, because my take is that this assumes, which where me and you, Mr. Mcesar, might differ, but differing in appreciating what you say. It might be easier for someone who is in Canada, but more difficult for someone who is in South Africa, Emakai, to access the system. And then we go back and complain about land use, traditional leaders, and so forth, when the system is not friendly enough to make them to do prospecting as to what is in their land where they stay. That is, to me, the first question, that he doesn't know what product. Maybe there is gold in Umvezo or there is diamond, but he doesn't know. In order for his people to know there is gold or diamond, must go to, because they can't use, I know, it's difficult, he's trying even now, but it will be difficult for him to go to the system. So you must go to Port Elizabeth. I'm just making an typical effort. So that to me becomes the first issue. If we say we want communities to play an active role, how will they? Because what actually happens in most cases, with due respect, not in a negative, then those who are enlightened, they become the representatives of those communities and speak on their behalf even when they don't have a mandate. The second one, please explain to me, because this has been a concern. I know it doesn't fall to you in your chapter, can I get clarity? Someone said to me the most difficult thing, I think it's Honorable Schmidt now in his question, a new emerging person in your environmental compliance requirement. You say the person who has applied for a right will be this side, and then granted in his name or name, then there will be this side, the environmental practitioner. What are the cost implications of the two? Because someone told me that in order for you to get that environmental practitioner, you must be prepared to part with something no less than 300,000 rand. I'm just making an example. Now, it actually means even if you were to go, they've got this thing now, I don't know where they want you to put something, even if your DFIs, your development finance institution, they even also put a condition. When you ask, this is, I may need this amount, they then say, what are you prepared to put on? Surely you wouldn't go there if you had something. Now, if I go there and say to, I don't know, IDC, and then IDC says, no, if you are prepared to, we want 300,000, would you be prepared to find 50,000? I'm just making an example. Now, why this compulsion to have an environmental practitioner as a cost direct to the applicant who is not in the mainstream without any cushy, if I'm correct, because now, that right is not granted to me, it's granted to a second party who, to me, I would argue and say, generally is making money at the expense of my interest in investment. I think that question is it. Now, let me come to this one. Sitting here now, I hear Honorable Lorima, maybe has gone to the system and so forth. Take this rural one who is coming from a town that does not have even a robot, and say to me, I understand the system as you have presented it. I'll be honest with you. It would have been better to say, and I might say, maybe you may tell us how that possible. Maybe better to have the system, the format of the system, in the presentation that says, in the system, you will find this for a form of this nature. You are expected to fill in this. Having filled in this, the next step will be this one. Having gone through the next step being this one, then in order for you to get up, you will then be on stage one where the prospecting license is granted or not granted. I think it may also to that question that Honorable Lorima then says, why the system can't tell me before I launch to make this, I understand the premise. We're improving a system, so it means we have not mastered the system. But surely when a system, he has made an application, the system probably, in my own understanding, will not lock me out, even if it doesn't tell me that he has made an application. It may not lock me out of it, of the application to say already applied for. So I made the application, down the line you are 5-6, and it doesn't have even a time frame or period to say, if I've made an application, it will give me, I'm making an argument, 3 months or so, to see whether is there any other application after that, and then it closes after a certain period. If we were to get that kind, is there a period, or it is subject to any, if I apply today to say, I think there's something here, will it remain open even when you have considered my application after 2 months or 3 months? Will it still be there available when there is this? How long does it take to consider the first application? So I'm saying it's unfortunate, Babum says, I can't sit in here and say, okay, here are the stages, which then can also answer the question that Honorable Nyambe raised. At what point then it becomes a rejection? What will be those conditions? It might be an error in the management application. It could be non-compliance with the conditions that I'm supposed to go with. It could be on the basis that already there's an application that has been made in the area, which probably has not been declared. So I think for me, if, with due respect, if it was a system that we can be able to dramatically look at it, how it operates, in a form system, it would, I think we would have that understanding. And then say, which is the intention shown of the committee, how then do we think we can make a contribution to improve the system, to cater for some of the issues? I wouldn't go to the extent, I wouldn't know. I know, as you struggle, I always say, one of the best things you must know, you make a law, there are others who are planning to master how to get around the law. So I thought if that clarity for me were to be given, or to just say, is it possible to give us the format of the system practically? How does it work in terms of the stages and the phases? I'm not saying send us a video, but if there can be something that says, here is the form, here is it work. For prospecting, you make this application, that's stage one. Then for the right application, that's stage two. Linked to the one environmental system, comply with the environmental requirements that you are supposed to get. An environmental practitioner understands, in inverted commas, the cost implication that goes with that. Because at the end of the day, we shouldn't make it impossible for our people to enter the industry. But if some of these things that are being said, and I'm not sure whether sitting here I can guarantee you that one of the preconditions for a mining license or activity is water, because in most cases that complaint, even from water and sanitation themselves, they are still complaining, although you still have got the one environmental system, they are still complaining about the very same thing, that were culprits. Most of these mining companies, post your 2014 December new one environmental system, are still operating without a water license. But I was just saying, the difficulty that we may find is that not have been there in the system itself could be problematic. The last thing is that, to what extent are your workshops, how do you calculate the workshops in terms of capacity building, in what format beyond internal? Because maybe that suspicion that comes in that you were talking about is on the basis that because Abanye, you may find that the majority at our age would not have even gone beyond standard 10, which is your grade 12, then happens to know how to make an application and can go to the regional office. And others find tomorrow that, no, this one was at the regional office and came back and said he's owning a right. What about us when we... So he might have been had an added advantage to go there. Now, to what extent is the system, especially, to be honest, in your key areas where there is a focus of mining, I would say Rustenburg in the northwest, where there are major activities. I know I said in the north and Midland. In Mpumalanga, I'm sure it will be your Barberton and other areas. to what extent is that, do these workshops work in a manner that conscientizes people in close proximity where there are major mining activities? I think that is, Honorable Lauren.
So, Chair, I think you've given a brilliant suggestion about the process to take up through an application. I think that would be very, very useful. You can sit there on a computer and you can see it on the screen and you say, right, this is where you go first, these are the steps, and so that would be really useful for me. I think you've also stumbled onto a bigger issue, which maybe even needs an entire day for us to discuss, Mr. Chair, and that is the barriers to entry to small mining applicants posed by administrative requirements. I know, for instance, that I've heard complaints that a lot of people who used to do, for example, alluvial diamond mining, find it no longer viable, even though the mine itself would be viable. The barriers to entry posed by the applications process, the environmental authorization process, etc., are so high and so expensive, it's just not worth it. So it's the administration that stops them working. And I think the corollary to that is when they can't do it legally, often it becomes an illegal mine. So I just park that and make a suggestion. And just to come back to the answer that was given to me about being able to see rights ownership online and the intention to improve the system, is there a timeline on that? Because the thing that worries me about this is people come to me and they say, you know, I can look at Mozambique and I can find out who has rights on any piece of land. How come I can do it in Mozambique and I can't do it in South Africa? So is there a timeline for when we will be able to access this in South Africa?
Honorable Smith.
Thank you, Chair. On the issue of the one-stop shop, I was under the impression, maybe wrongly, that it was going to develop in terms of the lodge application, you send to the different departments, you get it right in the end, the applicant says, thank you very much, I've got my water use license, I've got my nearly my rezoning kind of application, kind of process of thought. But you say one-stop shop is only the IPC or the IMC, I think you call
it.
So if there's a problem which interdepartmental cannot be resolved, you then approach the IPC or the INC to assist. So that's the one-stop shop you're referring to. It's not a streamlining of a process. That would be something.
All right. Okay. Are we good?
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson and members. And we fully agree with the sentiments that have been shared, including the accessibility and the location of our offices, Honourable Chairperson. In fact, there's a process that we've been considering to ensure that we are more accessible to the people, especially the people in the rural areas. But beyond that, given the cost implications of service delivery, okay, maybe that doesn't come out right, but the cost implication that goes with doing our work as a public servant, because especially us, we tend to travel long distances in some of the provinces, like Northern Cape, Eastern Cape, and even Western Cape in some parts of the Western Cape. And it also comes with risk to our official. We have decided to embark on certain measures to see if we can, you know, consider where are we located. And we agree with yourself, Honorable Chairperson, that most of our major mines are in the Fryhead Newcastle area, in KZN. And we'll have to look to say what are the possibilities there, including in the Eastern Cape. And we've also started that process, Chairperson. We've also, to make an example, in the Northern Cape, most of our mines now are in the Katu area, or the major mines are in the Katu area. We have an office in Kimberley, and we have a satellite office in Springbok. And it appears Springbok is much closer to Cape Town, for instance. You know? So I think those are the things that we've been also looking to say, how do we become more accessible and also reduce the risk to our own officials as well, and also deal with the cost implication that goes with the work that we we are looking at that, Chair. In terms of the one-stop shop as well, I'll also require my colleague to respond to the other. The one-stop shop, yes, Honorable Schmidt. It's an initiative by the state president. They've established their interministerial committee on to improve investment. To say, as government, how do we come together and make sure that, you know, we unblock those areas and look at, if let's say there's methods of incentives that people are looking at, we look at that. If we look at, if there's an issue of capital that is required from outside, how do we make sure that the issues of red tapes, we deal with them. If there are challenges on infrastructure as well, and there are projects that we, on infrastructure, that if we fast track them, it will open up the economy in the Lephalale area, in the Limpopo area. There's a water project in Mzumbe, in the Eastern Cape, that was also being looked at. Their investors were also ready to say, we want to help, you know. In the Mpumalanga area, between Gauteng and Mpumalanga, there's what we call the Moloto Road. You know, there's been challenges previously in terms of accidents and so forth. So I think that initiative is to say, let's unblock the barriers and make sure that we fast-track those projects and we see economic value and also job creation there. So I think from our space, in the mining space, it was those bigger projects as well. But we think if we deal with infrastructure challenges, the licensing challenges as well, there will be value for economy. But now there's the one environmental system that we've referred to as well. It's between ourselves, the DMR, the environmental affairs, water affairs, to say the applicants, and hence sometimes there's these challenges of people mining sort of illegally or without water license. Because of that frustration there, a person has, or an applicant has, a mining right, but it takes time to be granted, or the mining license, the water license to be granted. So that initiative is to try to unblock those issues. And also additionally to assist with those challenges that are referred to of the NEMA regulations, which are costly, as Chairperson has clearly indicated, that some instances they are up to 300,000, in some instances they are about 500,000. You know, then we engage through that process or bilaterally with the Department of Environmental Affairs to say, you know, there's these challenges, how do we help? Because they also have a huge impact on some transformation. I think we are dealing with that in that case. Maybe you can touch on some of the technical issues maybe that I might have not touched on.
I think the one that I would really speak to is on rejection and the extent of the impact of the workshop, which I think you've touched on, and also on the business processes. And I think we took the presentation and just put it at a high level. The business processes on Samba are explained. You know, there's various applications for various forms to be completed, which DG through you, we can be able to come and take and present to the committee and show you how the system works, you know, from the beginning of application to the end. There are various forms that are available. When do we reject? Firstly, the Act is clear, the 2008 Act is clear, that if there's a proceeding application on a property, then we will, the subsequent application must be rejected. However, I think the emphasis that I place on the need to conduct the physical verification by regional managers still stands, because we do not want to open, we are worried of opening ourselves up to litigation. Other sources of rejection are incomplete documents. Sometimes you find that a person lodges an environmental application, and then there's an MPRDA application, and then they are required under the MPRDA to complete documents on the work program, on health and safety, if they're mining by the SLP. So if they do not lodge those documents and the application is incomplete, we would obviously return it to the applicant. I think it's important to emphasize that the system is, when we conceptualize it and with what we're intending to do, we would like it to be a model wherein we find ourselves fitting in the law into the system, because we cannot use a system to replace the law. So in administering it, we administer it in the ambit of the law. So hence acceptances and rejections and grantings and refusals will still happen within the ambit of the law. I think I'll hand over to you.
Chair, I think there's a question around the timeline. We indicated the last bullet on the conclusion in the presentation. We indicated that we are busy with the update and cleanup of the system. And the update goes also with the records that we need to place in the system. So we have already acknowledged that we have that challenge, that we have not uploaded all the information into the system. But in regard to the improvement also, Chair, it needs us a lot of money, which with the limited funding or budget that we are having, we really are unable. We're coming far with the improvement. Firstly, the system was not really working properly in the district. We had to make sure that each district has got a server that we have completed. We are busy now. We need to increase the bandwidth with regards to the system so that the system can work properly. Because one of those issues, you'll find that if your bandwidth is very small, it takes time for you to upload information and work on the system. So we can also detail to say these are the steps. When we present we take you through the system, how it works, we can also present on that day to say this is the plan in terms of the improvement with clear timelines. But we must also indicate to the committee that we might not realize that yet tomorrow, or we can't say even in next financial year we have completed that, because it needs a lot of money that the department doesn't have.
Okay. Having said so, we will tell you when we need this information,
okay.
Especially on the practical work, so that as members we are at the same length. And good luck. Let me tell you one thing. What's the
Mamoshane?
If you don't have passion and capacity to motivate for more money, others are going to go out and motivate for more money. So, in your budget process, just be able to project how much you need and why it's so critically important for you to get this money. That if this government puts 5 rands, it stands to get a return of 5,000 rand as a short-term investment. They must give you this 5 rand. I doubt they won't give you. Because cleaning up the system, uploading the necessary information, it may open up space for more people to see the opportunity for investment. It may be short-term, but in the long run, you see, you must make that motivation. Convince us so that we can convince also others to say yes. I hate to raise this thing because I don't want to sound like it's a reactionary thing to make. We want free education, not just some of us. We don't even appreciate free higher education. We want free education. But if you don't have a generation base
to finance that free education, it's going to be impossible. All what you will do, we'll take that money, put it this side, and then you are unable to pay the resources. It's, you know, social investment sometimes, investing in social, not to say it's negative, it's also good, because in the long run, you are building a well and highly educated nation. The problem, though, is like someone who is on retirement and is living on the amount of money that is at the bank. You are not investing there, you are withdrawing. That's all what you are doing. So the more you withdraw, the more the limited capacity to sustain yourself becomes. So you have to build capacity to deposit so that you can finance sustainability. So do it very well. The way you are putting it, you are still putting it more as a grievance and a concern. Now put it as a motivation to say we want to improve our system to an extent that we can make it more friendly and more attractive for investment purposes, so that anyone will access this system. I like the point that we're saying, it may be world class, but as long as it is not domestified, it may attract the world, attract entire South Africans who would want to play a meaningful role in the economy of this country. So build a system that, as much as it is modeled in the South African context, that it can be demonstrated in the entire world that we can have such a system. So I would want you to go, as you leave, before you come and tell us about the administrative part of it, show us what could be the spin-offs if we master the system. And Mamukambule, don't be afraid. We can make the system to work for the law. The law to also work for. You need to be able to come back and say to the committee, because of the limitations in the law here, this system will not respond. But if the system was operating in this framework of the law, surely we will then be able, so that we can know whether the problem is, the intentions may be good, I agree with you, but they can be hampered by law. So just master that part then. What is it that this law is blocking us from doing the best that we want? I think to me it's the most critical thing. The reason I was saying good luck, Babum says, is that we shouldn't, I know it's unfortunate, may not necessarily be belonging to you. Let's look at who benefits of this environmental requirements that you are putting. And just leave it there. Because one day when we say bring it, let's see who are the beneficiaries. But one thing I can guarantee you, the beneficiaries is not the people who are making application to have licenses. We dare have a government that continues to enrich one individual, even if it's me, simply because I'm an environmental practitioner, I must then be the one who accumulated the experience. Because now it's like directing. If this system was working on a within the internal systems of government. But what I get sometimes is that if I'm an environmental practitioner as an individual, and that environmental practitioner, the state says, come with so-and-so. It's like something that says, when you go, says, no, don't worry, go and find an advocate or a senior counsel. That is what is going to help you to come here. You are actually saying now, enrich an whether it's African, black, is colored, is Indian, or is white. The truth of the matter is that it's one individual who, by law, is compelled to get rich out of what the state requires. So if for you, in order to get help, you must come to me, it actually means indirectly or unintentionally the state is feeding me. I don't know whether you get what I say. So the matter between yourselves and the Department of Environmental Affairs, you need to find a way to sort it out very quickly. One of the reasons RAF had to make an internalized system, the road accident fund, is simply because in most cases the lawyers were making money, private lawyers were making money out of the state. To an extent, sometimes go and invest. So I'm saying your system should move away from the empowerment of individuals. Not to say they're wrong, but if it's a one environmental system, let the system be able to subsidize itself and respond to within itself on what has to be done. So I think to me that is, but I hope that those engagement, which we will find. One of the things I think, I understand and I agree with you, your budget is very small. I mean, I want to see where's the budget that is smaller than you. Unfortunately, we found it like that, but your contribution is very high. So we can't help it. All that I will advise you, try and find other ways to that you can model the work. For an example, you know, in most of the oversights we're going, there's very minimal role that is being played by provincial governments as well as the local government. So I would say even traditional councils or traditional communities, you must find a way where instead of people moving, that's the point I wanted to say in effect. Find a way where instead of the people moving to your regional offices, that your regional offices can go to where people are. For an example, if the system can work for me when I'm at home, what makes it difficult to create a system that can work in a municipal offices or in other regional offices of other departments? In most cases, we've got economic development in almost all the provinces. What is it that is it so difficult to, as you run your workshops, you assist them so that they can generate interest in their communities, so that the use of the IT system as a form of application, it can be a responsibility of either local government or traditional councils where they've got this system, but even for other regional or provincial offices. So it's a creativity matter. I was not fighting the issue of Mvezo or Ingusha, which is Pedi and Port Elizabeth, or Utrecht and Durban. I was just saying you can utilize the existing, because we talked about corporate governance. So if we talk about good intergovernmental relations, all what we need to do is to empower other jurisdiction areas that have got authority on issues of economic development, whether it's local government or whatever, so that it's not about people having to come to you with your limited resources, but also being able to assist local economic development initiatives at intergovernmental level to be able to respond on those activities. On that note, I think you have done your best. Thank you very much. As I've said, when we require this information, or when you are bullable enough, you are coming here to convince us about your budget and your APPs and so forth, you will be able to do that good work, even if we have not sent it and say, we're giving you check, we're ready. I don't think it's a difficult system. On that note, honorable members, thank you very much, Babu Msiza. Can you go to the next item? I've made a suggestion, honorable members, that we suggest that you come back next week, 9 o'clock. Sia is going to find the venue. We don't want to go to the venue where we'll have the joint meeting because we might be disturbed. That venue can only be 1 hour to finalize the adoption of the report. Is that a risk?